Chapter 9. Prophecy Fulfilled.
One of the more important prophecies that Liar revealed to me seemed to me to be more than a prediction, a warning. My life had been slipping from surprise to surprise since I had come to know her. She had made me feel a fortunate human being, and consequently, through her discussions, had awakened in me a feeling of knowledge of such dimensions that I had come to believe that Laia possessed much more of divinity than of woman. On other occasions she had offered me proofs by predicting political results which in their time occurred as predicted, the death of Anwar Sadat, the attempted assassination of the President of the United States, of Ronald Reagan, the death of Brezhnev 1 year before the event and the premature death of Andropov, as well as the attempted assassination suffered by the Pope, plus catastrophic floods, heavy snows, and severe earthquakes, were all predicted with surprising accuracy. Over a lapse of 5 years Laia had predicted political events that came to pass exactly as she said. For such, when she spoke of a future imminent danger for humanity, when I still could not imagine what it would be, I was afraid that it was something really serious.
"We will be in the province, a few kilometers from the field. We will meet them,"
she told me days before our meeting. It was obvious that after having listened for more or less 10 years to Laia had come to know much of her, but also I had learned too much about my own world. She, surprisingly, induced me to see all of those events in Observer, without involving myself, not even emotionally in what happened. Now something was occurring within me. I felt depressed and experienced an expectant anxiety. I noticed in her words a certain formality unusual for her. I knew, and later had the opportunity to verify, that when something strange occurred in the life of anyone leaving consequences, I would imagine from the moment that it began I believed in Laia and her teachings which apart from her the happenings would stir up a torrent of surprise. We met 1 month of May, by a village near Mwichokan. That Thursday I arrived with noticeable anticipation. I was convinced that Laia would take priority in my life and she knew it. I experienced a certain agitation inside of me. What was that she had told me? Why had she made this appointment in such a strange and isolated place? While I arrived I had walked around the place a little. The sun shined splendidly and the air was saturated with aromas emanated by fruit trees planted around the small wide cottages distributed one by one along the side of the road there. The oxygen that I breathed there seemed to nurture my spirit. Suddenly she arrived. She was in front of me with the fresh smile and all of the beauty that simply illuminated her. Completely. She was attired in her black pantsuit with the light blue buttons, seeming like an image drawn from a science fiction movie. I took out my cigarette case and selected one, lit it, and inhaled the smoke profoundly. I felt indecisive, anxious to know that which she would tell me and fearful at the same time about what she might say. I was afraid also that those days were the last of our friendship. And also I felt that my days were slowly coming to an end. All passes, all transpires, all flows in the existence of man. Laia now not only was my friend, my advisor, my informer, but had found such submergence in my life that to extract her, pull her out, leave off seeing her, was going to provoke a trauma in me. The one moment that scarcely stretched to perceive the face of her was overshadowed upon seeing a splendid butterfly that happily flew by next to us. Days before this she had commented to me that they would be carrying out labors of a social type in a place near Morelia. She took me by the hand. It was an enduring sensation that had made me feel like a colleague. Laia had the particularity of living in my memory even when her absences were prolonged. Upon contact with her hand my anxieties went up in smoke, completely.
"Do not fear. I know that you think that we may not come back together to see each other, but there still will be more occasions. Depending on many things, but fundamentally on our investigations."
She had let go of my hand and we were walking slowly. She inserted her hands in the lateral pockets of her jacket and I continued smoking. "Lia," I said suddenly, breaking the silence, "you met me here for something which supposedly is very important. Isn't that so?" She turned on her heels and, looking at me face to face, said,
"Yes, Professor. You have been an inestimable friend during much time of your cycle, though for me seeing each other and talking has been relatively very little. I have enjoyed very beautiful instances at your side, and I learned, I admired you for your existential vibrations, and that terrestrials also know how to love intensely. We know those changes of conduct that have operated in you for one cycle of arc or another, and I can assure you that is for which your race is experiencing a change, imperceptible to you, not only at an organic level, but genetically, besides reasonably and habitually. They move within boisterous confusion like I said to you and in continual modification. Your mode of life, dress, your studies, your work, your form of love, of being, to exist and to fight, are changing in conference with those same events as is required. I can tell you that man himself will allow himself to be carried by the current of a river whose speed is dizzying. Man could change the process of his life, but he feels impotent to do it, and moreover to even try. Today men of your world explore the past to find traces of collusions, to feel through that the reality of a world or epoch before, which he could compare with this present civilization."
"Lia," I intervened, "in my world a very important scientific change has taken place in these last years. During the length of our friendship you have told me of really surprising things. I have learned more about life than I have known during the whole time of my existence before. You have spoken of your world. To me this is inspirational. But I fear that you are seeing some negative aspects of the planet Earth. I would like to ask you, is it perhaps that there would be still more and greater dangers awaiting humanity? Is it that it is not enough that man has reached a certain grade of bestial violence for which the life on this planet still will see itself in greater dangers? Why then live, if the existence does not offer any security to man?"
"It is not the life, Professor. It is man himself who has not known the cause of his destiny, political, social and economical."
She lowered her gaze, and then she looked at me and I saw a strange shine of resisted worry in her eyes. She touched her ring on her right hand, precisely on her index finger. We continued walking. The occasion began to collapse. The evening set in an orange color, at the time when the earth discharges the incomparable smell of dried mud.
"Professor,"
she said, breaking the silence in which we both were submerged,
"look at how the sun sinks slowly in the west. You feel upon seeing that a certain indifference because you know with a certainty that it will return one time after another passing itself over the horizon. It will continue its path around the galaxy, toward the constellation that you call Hercules, but always dragging in its orbit planets attracted to it by its powerful force of gravity. Life is not the same. Each day that passes will not return. You know, in determined moments of your life that you can squander days of your indolent childhood, that you can profit by certain months of your youth trying to use them in study, but then, when you approach maturity, decrepitude, when by the inertia of that which you call time, the body deteriorates, you know that each hour, that every minute that transpires will not return, and you then avoid the loss of one single instant. You have knowledge of the danger to which your world has been exposed through the atomic generation in its wide spectrum, but you and the men of Earth ignore the fact that you still must confront greater dangers that proceed from exterior space.